We apologize for this brief interruption in the show. As many of you likely know, the Higher Standard Podcast is officially sponsored by Transcend Company. Transcend has been my longtime provider for both testosterone and peptide therapies. But they offer so much more. Whether you're interested in health, wellness, or longevity, it all begins with you getting your blood work done. A lab draw will help you get the numbers and establish your baseline. You can go to transcendcompany.com/THSP. That's transcendcompany.com/THSP. Or you can click the link in the show notes on any streaming platform and on YouTube. Fill out your information and one of the representatives will contact you to get your journey started today. Now back to the show. I have a personal admission to make right off the top.
Right off the top.
Yeah. I want to say that the jokes about Diddy have really enriched the quality of my life.
Honestly,
I've never been so happy to make references to an individual ever, I think.
Ever?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to beat the Diddy situation.
I don't know, man. I feel like for 4 years, your boy DJ was giving us some fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's hard to beat.
DJ?
Yeah.
Who's DJ?
Donald J. Trump.
I take personal offense to that.
That's 4 years.
I thought you were the one who didn't want to get political in the show.
Yeah, but it was funny. What do you mean? There was a lot of funny stuff going around at the time.
See,
you can't justify some of the stuff that he did.
Arun, can you back me up on this, please?
I mean, Teddy's right, man. He had some fire.
Oh, God damn it. I forgot you guys are Democrats.
What do you mean? Even if you're a Republican, you have to laugh at some of that stuff. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Today, we got a great episode for you. In our beginning segment, we want to get into things to know before buying a home. And we'll also sprinkle in a little bit of real estate investment as well.
Are you looking at me for confirmation? Is that what that was?
That's you. That's the warm handoff.
Chris, stop speaking. Smile.
Do what you do. Dance.
All right. Well, look, we can all acknowledge that when you buy a home the first time, it can be a very scary thing. But I will tell you right off the gate that with all the properties that I have purchased, and I've purchased many over the years, they've never not been stressful. There's different points in your life where different things are the highest stressor for you. But even seasoned real estate investors will tell you when you buy a property, there's always a myriad of things that can and will go wrong. There's unexpected things that'll happen. This is why you have things like property inspections. This is why you have financing lined up. This is why you do all the things you can to protect and insulate yourself. And there are several different, I guess, pivots that you kind of go through as somebody who's buying a property. Number one, you buy your first property. Number two, you step up into a larger property if you're lucky. Saeed and Arun, for example. Not me, obviously. Same property, small. Petite.
I stepped down to a smaller property, just for reference.
A smaller multi-million dollar property, I understand.
Multi-million? That's not factual.
I'm just saying. So, and then when you get into the seasoned real estate investor group, there is a point where you can no longer really buy single-family residence homes anymore because you've hit the, what is technically a kind of a cap set by the GSEs, the government-sponsored enterprises. Mm-hmm. Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae generally think that anything above 10 is considered additional risk, and they won't finance anybody who owns more than 10 properties on their credit report. Mm-hmm. Which is why a lot of people on social media who are like, I bought 45 properties using this crazy methodology, and I got financing on all of them. You're like, okay, from what lender?
Yeah, exactly. Who?
I guess you can go private equity or something like that, or a smaller community bank, regional bank that might do it for you, but they're going to require you to put more money down. They're generally not going to give you a 30-year amortizing loan. And it's going to be treated more like a business loan because at this point in time, you're running a business now that you've hit a certain scale.
Right.
That's always a big red flag. It's one I see a lot on social media, people who talk about scaling properties and ownership. But let's get into the nuances for the first-time home buyers, and then we will kind of layer in a little bit of extra flavor for the investors who are buying multiple properties.
Right. A key part, real quick, to what Chris mentioned that I know I've had some conversations with some people that they didn't realize this, is you get better financing options when you're buying a home for yourself personally. And that's what Chris was talking about by getting loans through government-sponsored enterprises.
Yes.
And then after 10, you start getting pricing for loans that are looked at more of as an investment.
Well, and a lot of banks won't even touch it. So
yeah.
And think about it from a risk perspective. This is why this happens, right? If you're buying a home and it's your first home and it's your only home, you are more than likely going to pay the mortgage above all other expenditures because you don't want to lose the place you live.
Right.
It's a worst case event scenario that you're going to lose your property. But by large account, all outward measures and large accounts, I can't speak very well tonight, so just make that sound articulate in your own head. By all outward measures, you have a lower probability of default on a property if you own one and it is your only one, or your first time or multiple time buyer, if it's the property you're living in. Mm-hmm. Once you get to a point where you have like a second home, a vacation home or something like that, or you have a rental property, the probability of you defaulting goes up significantly, because that is an income producing property for you, or a leisure additional benefit to your life property.
Right.
You don't need it to live. It's nice to have.
And the lender will most likely require you to put even more of a down payment.
Right. So what that generally means is you get better pricing, because the lower risk for you buying a home, when you start providing additional risk in the things that you're doing to banks, they charge up for the risk in terms of increasing your interest rate and requiring you to put more money down.
Yeah, to have more skin in the game. But let's get into something for some of these first-time home buyers. The first question, that you should be asking yourself is really have an honest conversation with yourself. Are you even ready to buy a home? Do you have a stable job? Have you been at your job for 2 years? We know a lot of people who are self-employed, mm-hmm. who, let's just say, aren't reporting their income on their tax returns the way maybe they should be. And then, sure enough, they want to go, you know, apply for a home loan and buy a home, but now they don't have the tax returns to support it. As an underwriter, you know, we would be asking for 2 years worth of proof that you've been working at this said job, making as much money as you said you're making. Mm-hmm. So you really need to start planning for these things 2 years in advance.
So a good rule of thumb here is you need to understand the differences, the stratification, if you will, of where money comes from. So primarily, most people will go to a bank or a credit union they have an existing relationship with. If I have a deposit account with this place, I keep my checking and savings there. That's probably the first place I'm going to go to see if they can give me a loan. Sure, you can shop around. Sure, you can look into things. That's generally stop number one. And that'll usually give you the best interest rate possibilities. Stop number two can vary, but you can go to a private lender. Lots of private lenders out there that you probably don't recognize that are private lenders, but think of it like Quicken, Rocket Mortgage, people like that. They're not banks in the traditional sense, in that they're not leveraging money in the arbitrage sense. They generally will also make you a loan. In some cases, they're very hyper-competitive these days. You might actually get better than bank financing as far as interest rates go there, mm-hmm. depending on what type of property you're buying and what they specialize in. But there are all sorts of other specialty lenders out there, the third option, if you will, where they are willing to give you all sorts of money to do all sorts of fun things. I mean, I've seen some of them give 110% of the loan to value. So basically, the purchase price plus additional 10%, they charge you a lot for it, and there's a lot of strings to pull. I've seen some of them do what's tantamount to an income, you know, non-income verified loan, if you will, where essentially they're just looking at your bank statements. They're just looking at those bank statements to say, hey, I can see Syed has reoccurring income that is tantamount to this much per year on average for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I believe that Syed can pay the mortgage. The farther you go down that chain, generally speaking, the more expensive it's going to be for you to get financing.
Yes.
And this is where the broker comes in. If you got good credit and you're in a good financial position and you can go to a bank or you can go to somebody like a Rocket Mortgage, go direct to them. If you can't do that or you're struggling and it's becoming difficult for you to find somebody who will finance you because you've been declined one or two places, that's where a broker comes in. A real estate broker who specializes in getting you financing will help submit you to their, quote, lenders. They have a list of option one and option two that they typically take people to in worst-case event scenarios. They don't qualify at a traditional lender like your bank or like Rocket Mortgage, Quicken, or someone like that out there. LendingTree is another great example of this. LoanDepot, another example. If they can't qualify you or you're having some challenges there, generally speaking, a broker will have somebody that they can take you to try to fill that gap if they can. If they can't, then it might not be your time to get a home.
Right. So if you would go directly to a lender, you'll probably get a more favorable rate, right, versus going to a broker. One of the other benefits of going to a broker is you have one point of contact that you're dealing with. They really take care of everything for you from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. And the way they get paid is they get paid through the lender, but the way the lender is able to pay them is they charge you a slightly higher rate.
Well, it depends. Some brokers will charge you direct.
Yeah.
It really comes down to your situation. Some brokers will be like, look, I can't get a fee from the lender on this, so I'm going to charge you 1% direct.
Right.
There's all sorts of different ways this can go down, but suffice, my father's a broker. I'm a real estate broker licensed anyway. I've been down that. I have nothing but respect for the space. But what I'll tell you is, if you want the best possible rate, try to go direct if you can.
Yes. And then the next step is, let's just say you got that all under wraps. You've been working at a steady job for over 2 years. You're making good money. You're very disciplined. You got good credit, And now you want to figure out how much do you qualify and how what is your buying power, right?
Yeah.
So what? That's another thing that a broker can help you with. Now, you can very much do this research on your own and figure this out yourself, right? But what you're
it
gonna
is intimidating. Want, let's take a pause there.
Yeah.
I know it's intimidating.
Right.
I know a lot of people, when they think about buying a home, they're like, oh, fuck, man, homes are expensive. That's a lot of money. I don't even know how much I can put down. I don't know how much I can buy. And they really, really, really struggle to get started mm-hmm. with this because it's scary. The idea is scary. And the other part about it is you start calculating things. You're kind of guesstimating, right? Mm-hmm. Insurance and taxes. You're kind of just ballparking it. And you're like, I don't have the experience to be doing this. Is this number right? You don't have to be right. You just got to be close enough to where you get an idea of whether you can afford this.
Right. And what goes into figuring out what your buying power is you should be doing this before you go shopping around for a home with your real estate agent, right? You go to your lender or you go to your broker and you figure out how big of a loan do you even qualify for. Now, you don't want to stretch yourself out too thin, right? But you take that amount and you also look at how much money you have to put down as your down payment. You combine the two. That's technically your buying power, right? But you want to make sure you're not stretching yourself out so thin. So that way you know what market you can get into, what neighborhoods you can get into, and then you have to also factor in your closing costs and how much you want to leave for yourself for reserves.
Can you break that down?
Yeah,
like by numbers.
That. Yeah, I knew he skipped over it. I knew you were gonna think that. You know, I'm so in sync with you right now, Arun. I feel like I'm inside of you.
Oh yeah,
inside your head. Well done.
Welcome back.
So I want to be clear here that you need to go online and figure out, there's plenty of calculators. I'll probably put a link in the show notes for you to see a similar calculator so you can kind of figure out what you qualify for based on your income, based on the money you can put down. You need to have a rough estimate on your own before you talk to anyone. And I know that sounds like a lot. It's not that hard. You just put some numbers into a calculator and you can kind of ballpark it. The reason why is at some point in time, if you're going to look at a property, you need to be either pre-approved or pre-qualified for a home of that price. And I'll explain what this all means. Basically, you're going to need to find a lender who's willing to finance you for a home up to a certain value that you've identified. If you've done this homework, you can identify what you think a home value that you can afford is. Then you will take your tax return, your pay stubs, your financial information that your lender will require. You'll give it to your lender, and your lender will say, okay, Saeed can get a loan up to $500,000 for a home, or can buy a home up to $500,000. And what that basically means, the lender has looked at your finances, and they've either qualified you in advance, or just pre-approved you for that. A pre-approval is superior than a pre-qualification. It means they've looked at everything, they've already underwritten you, they're going to approve you for this loan.
Right, and that looks very good in the eyes of the seller.
Which is what you're going to in turn do with it. When you go to shop for a home, you now know the home that you feel comfortable you can afford, you requested a loan of that amount, you've been approved for a loan of that amount subject to finding a property, you take that pre-approval letter out with you to go look at properties. And whenever you say, hey, you know what, Chris, I like this property, let's make an offer on it. Part of your offer will be a pre-approved letter from your lender saying, hey, Saeed, he wants to buy this property. He's making an offer of $500,000. Here's his pre-approval letter of $500,000. And oh, by the way, here's the required 10 or 20% down that his lender did the math on for the pre-approval letter. Here's the evidence of that liquidity from his bank statement from his bank.
Right.
And that gives you a complete offer package. Obviously, you have to negotiate terms and things of that nature, but those things smushed together and given to a seller is what's going to really give you a best chance at winning an opportunity to buy a property.
Right. And you don't necessarily have to feel like you have to remember each and every single one of these things. Any halfway decent real estate agent should be telling you these things as well, and they're going to be asking you to get these things before you guys even go start looking at properties.
Yeah, a good real estate agent, if you start there, and some people do, which is all good, if you start there, should shepherd you through this process. Generally speaking, a good real estate agent will also have a relationship with a lender they constantly work with or frequently work with, and they'll say, okay, you know what, you don't have a lender of your own, go work with my friend here, Kevin, at this company or whatever it might be. So there's different contact points, and everybody in this ecosystem benefits from you buying, right? Your lender's going to benefit from you getting a loan from you. Your broker, if you have a mortgage broker, is going to benefit for you getting them getting the loan for you. The real estate agent is going to get a benefit of you buying the property. So they all want you to get the property.
Yes.
So it kind of comes down to that, but you have to kind of understand what happens next because there are some nuances. And again, seasoned professionals will walk you through this, but generally speaking, they don't unless you ask. And some people feel embarrassed to ask questions because they feel like they should know all these things because they're buying a property and they're wearing their big boy or big girl pants.
Right, exactly. So back to Chris's example where he said Saeed got approved for a $500,000 loan.
Yeah.
Let's just say I go out and now I'm thinking, okay, I have roughly $120,000 that I could put down towards a down payment. I'm also accounting for future closing costs of this loan and you know, some money as reserves in case anything happens down the road, right? Let's go. I see a property that's listed for sale and I want to win this deal.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, luckily for all buyers out right now, we're back to normalized times. Approximately 25-26% of all sales right now are being sold above list price, and that's pretty normal. That was around pre-pandemic numbers.
There's still not about 6 months of inventory in all regions, but it's getting better.
It's getting a little bit better, right? So let's just say you want to sweeten the deal a little bit and you go above list. This is something that you have to make sure you keep in mind. If you do go above list,
the property's listed for sale price.
Right. And let's just say the property's listed for sale at $585,000. And I want to sweeten the deal and I offer $600,000. Okay. And the appraisal comes back in at $585,000. I am responsible for that difference of $15,000. Okay. That money will have to come out of my pocket. The lender will not finance it.
No.
Right. And in most cases, right, in normalized times, you should be able to renegotiate maybe that price down, meet them halfway. But there is some wiggle room for negotiation. Let's just say, for the sake of the argument, the seller's not willing to budge, right? Now you have to decide whether do I want to walk away from this property or do I want to fork over that $15,000? If you do, that will eat into your down payment, right? And if you don't have enough liquidity reserve to fork over the rest of that, mm-hmm. you might now be in a position to where you're no longer putting 20% down and you're now somewhere in the 17% range and going to have to start paying PMI as well.
So a few things to answer Arun's question from earlier in this prolongated answer that I think are important kind of metrics for you to understand. We have underwritten a lot of loans over the years, Saeed and I, and one of the things I can tell you that kind of unilaterally across all lenders is they want to see typically 6 months of PITI afterward. Principal, interest, taxes, and insurance monthly, your payment, times six in post-closing liquidity. So, for example here, let's just say your mortgage payment, all in, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance is $2,000 a month. Mm-hmm. That's what you're going to pay every single month to keep that property because you're impounding for taxes and insurance, meaning that your lender is going to take your annual payment for your taxes and insurance, divide by 12, and then bill you for that. So, you're paying 1/12 of your taxes and 1/12 of your insurance every single month. The benefit to you is you don't have to have a lump sum payment come in the mail to pay your property taxes or pay your property insurance every single year. You just pay it as part of your mortgage payment. I generally recommend that for first-time home buyers. Seasoned real estate investors say, hey, you know, Chris, I can make more money investing that money than I can just putting it in a reserve account for them to pay my taxes for it. So I'd rather just deal with that bill when it comes up. I impound for everything, even my investment properties. Yes, it makes my monthly mortgage payment more expensive, but it's one less headache for me to worry about because I have a day job.
I impound as well.
Exactly. And most people do. And Arun does as well, too,
mm-hmm.
because he loves pounding. One of the things I'll tell you about this process is if you have 6 months of $2,000 a month, $12,000 in post-close liquidity, you should be fine.
Yeah.
If you have less than that, generally speaking, the lender will say, you know what? This home is a bit of a stretch for you. You also have to consider things like PMI, as I mentioned, private mortgage insurance. So for decades and decades and decades, the mortgage market has been based off the concept of 30-year amortization, financing your home and paying back the loan over the course of 30 years. There might come a time in the future where a 40-year loan solves some of the affordability issues if home prices don't decline at any point in the not-too-distant future. So I think you'll probably see lenders talk about doing that to stretch out the mortgage payments, to make them a little bit lower and stretch it over time, which will in turn increase values even more as more people buy because now they have a longer time to repay it. So because 80% of the purchase price is what they've agreed to finance in most cases, you put down 20%, the bank will finance up to 80%. That's considered enough buffer of their risk. Once they finance more than 80%, they require you to pay private mortgage insurance, which insures the bank from risk of loss of you defaulting.
Right. And that could range anywhere to, I think, you know, a fraction of a percentage to 2% of the loan, right? Or this, yeah. Or the sale price. So
now, the good news isn't there permanently.
Yes.
Once your home approaches, once you pay down the mortgage enough, principal and interest, and you pay down the principal enough, Or if your home value appreciates enough and you're at an 80% loan to value, you can actually request to have that reappraised and have that taken off. So it's not a permanent thing. A lot of first-time home buyers will go this route. Private mortgage insurance is not super heavy. It can actually not be significant enough in some cases to dissuade you from doing it.
For reference point, this is exactly what happened to me, and this exact scenario happened to me, where I agreed to pay above the appraisal price, and it ate into my down payment, which caused me to have to only put 17% down versus the 20% I wanted to put down. Mm-hmm. I paid PMI for about 6 months. Then they called it recasting. Mm-hmm. I recasted the loan, and lucky for me, after 6 months, the home appraised for higher, and the value had gone up over that time period, and they just dropped my PMI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what happens for most people, at least if they're savvy enough, because there's no point in keeping it back beyond that. And a good bank or lender will let you know that you can possibly get that off at some point in time. Because right. Nobody wants you to pay it, and the bank doesn't really benefit from it unless you default and they need to use the insurance.
Yeah, because that money doesn't go towards the principal or interest. It just goes to them pocketing that money.
So a few things to note here. If you're buying a home as a second home or you're buying an investment property, there's really not a PMI set of circumstances for you. You're going to have to put down 20% or more. Just know that going in. Somebody will say, oh, Chris, oh, my God, no, I've got a lender who will do that. I don't care about your special circumstances. That's the general rule, right? This is up to 10 properties. When you get above, call it 7 or 8 properties, and I've been there in my life before, on your credit report, it can become very difficult to find financing. Everybody sees you as an extra risk at that point in time because you just have too many obligations. One of the things I see investors do a lot here, which is just a critical fatal error, is they say, okay, here's what's going to happen, okay? I'm going to buy this home for $1 million, and then I'm going to put down $200,000, and it's $800,000 in mortgage that I'm going to finance, and because I'm going to rent it out, I'm going to make this extra money, and that extra money will be used to pay the mortgage payment. No. The bank is going to qualify you based on the income you already have in place, and they're going to assume, even if you use it as a rental property, that you have the cash flow to cover that.
Right.
So which is a big disconnect.
Big disconnect, right? Exactly. So if all of these loans that you have, to Chris's example, you have 10 properties on your credit report, right? Mm-hmm. You have 10 different loans. They're going to underwrite you to what they call a global cash flow, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to make sure that the income that you're making can service all of these loans. It doesn't matter if you're renting them out. Well done, sir.
That was for your room.
Yeah,
golf clap like that.
Thank you. Golf clap. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that was a really good point to make. And here's some other things that we think definitely worth noting. I see people get really excited during this time and they get a little carried away, right? But when you're in the loan process, there's a lot of things that to you and I might seem like is general knowledge, but people get excited, man. They get carried away. So when your loan is in underwriting and even after it's approved, you want to make sure that you're not out there spending more money, right? Because you can't do anything until this thing closes and you have the keys. You don't want to go apply for a new car loan, right? You don't want to add a new credit card. You don't want to rack up more debt. Why would people rack up more debt? They're already buying furniture for the house that they haven't even got the keys for yet. You can easily see how this happens. Something else that'll happen is if parents are gifting you money and you make a large deposit, towards the end of the loan, they're going to ask for updated bank statements. And they're going to see, oh, wait, you just got $20,000 deposited into your account. What was that? What was that for? Where'd that come from? Right? And you're going to have to now explain everything. You don't want any large deposits coming in that's not ordinary, right? You don't want to co-sign for anyone on a loan, like a car loan. Something that I know that has happened before is if I've had friends where they've co-signed for people, and then when they go to apply for a loan, they can't, now they have to show proof that it was for somebody else, and they have to show 12 months worth of payments coming out of the other person's account. Otherwise, you go like, no, you co-signed it. That's your obligation.
Yep.
So just more and more headaches. So you just want to make sure that you avoid all of these things.
I've had a lot of throat clearing issues lately.
So. I feel like tonight I have some too.
Yeah, I think it's both of us. I think we're allergic to a room.
Back to back. I can leave.
Back to back weekends.
And back to back weeks and all just, it's. Plus, yeah. Now he's got.
That's actually a question that I had for Chris as well. What are some common mistakes a lot of first time homebuyers make?
Ooh, yeah.
I think there's a lot. I mean, I was one of them.
No, I think people tend to fall in love with the first properties they see. I always recommend that first-time home buyers don't do that. You got to understand that this is not a guarantee that you're gonna be able to win a property. Now, in this economy, more than any other economy, really historically, it's been kind of this new cadence where you make an offer, you might not get it. So don't fall in love with properties and don't get emotionally connected to them. until you're down the path far enough to where your money's hard, you've had an investigation, a property inspection, and everything feels good, because there's a lot of things that can come up and change the shift here. You don't want to be emotionally connected to the property, number one. Number two, understand that this process is not simple, okay? You have to go look at properties and find properties. Even if you do it online, you got to find properties. And you have to physically go to them. There are people who will say, no, no, you don't have to go to them. Okay, great. If you're an investor, that maybe that works for you. I've done that with lots of properties. I have properties I've never even seen in person. I get that that's a way to do things. For a first-time home buyer, no. Okay? If you're going to live there, hell no.
Right.
That's the other thing. If you're going to live in a property, get to know the area. You got to know the area you live in, because there's a lot of weird nuances to living in areas. If it's an attached condo or townhome, spend some time in the unit. Go there during 5 or 6 p.m. when your neighbors get home or at home and are awake.
Right.
So you know what the sounds are like. You know if there's got a big dog above you, stuff like that. There's little tactile things that are going to make your life much more enjoyable if you do the due diligence up front.
Right. I definitely did that more so on this last home of mine, on this current home of mine, than the first one. Because this is the house that I knew I was going to stay in long term. It was walking distance to the kids' school. I wanted to make sure that I'm really happy with it. A little pro tip for everyone that I think gets overlooked a lot. Check out the parking in the area, right?
Parking is a big deal.
Parking is a big deal that a lot of people tend to overlook. For me and my family, we host a lot of like family parties. And if parking is bad, I mean, that's just going to be like a real problem.
You say you host these parties a lot?
Yeah, family parties every Sunday.
Every Sunday?
Yeah. Mom, dad,
no, that's
brother-in-law.
Cool. Yeah, brother-in-laws, mom, dad. That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, I work on the podcast most Sundays by myself.
I work on them on Sundays too. Look at that.
I feel like you don't.
I feel like I do.
I don't.
We know.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Because your work's already done by then. Yeah.
Is it though? Well, Chris, piggybacking off of what you mentioned earlier, what are some like negotiating tips that you have for people? You were talking about like when you put an offer in.
Well, a good realtor will do this for you, and they'll be very, a good realtor has two aspects that I think is oftentimes one of the two is missing. Number one, they will handle that for you and they will advise you on the way to do it. And number two, they will explain to you their logic and why they're doing it. They're not going to gatekeep that secret from you. Okay, I do this way because of X, Y, and Z. A lot of them just get so frustrated explaining to people that they won't do it. They'll just say, we're doing it this way and this is how you get it. I think you need both. Negotiation tactics. Don't make your highest and best offer right away. I mean, I understand that you want to win a property. That's all good. But just know, if in Saeed's scenario, if the house is listed at 585 and you go out at 600, you might get a counteroffer for more than that.
Yeah.
Put in the offer you think will get you a counteroffer. And I know that sounds counterintuitive because you don't know and someone could bid crazy money. But if you're starting off above this and that's your highest and best, you could very easily get a counteroffer above that. And you can say, I gave you my highest and best. And they go, aw.
Yeah. This is actually something that Chris saved me a lot of money during my process, right? So the house actually got appraised. The current house that we live in actually got appraised for $30,000 less than their initial list price. The offer I made was right at list.
Yeah.
It came in at $30,000 less, right? My initial gut reaction, because I was so eager to get into the home, it was within walking distance of the school, and you just feel this immense amount of pressure during this time that you just want to tell yourself, whatever it takes, I don't care, just close the deal. And Chris was very, very calm, and he sat me and my wife down and was like, guys, don't be afraid to walk away from the property. You're not married to this property, right? And it was because of Chris that got me comfortable with that idea that I was willing to now renegotiate. Right.
I actually kind of wanted you guys to lose the property, to be honest with you.
I know you did. But because because of that, we went back. I was willing to pay the 30, but we went back to negotiating with them. And then we ended up meeting halfway in the middle.
That listing agent hated me.
Dude, and that saved me $15,000.
Well, there's different ways of negotiating as well without just the price. Right. There's things that you can waive.
Yeah. Well, there's inspections and things like that. I don't recommend people. And people got really into this.
Closing costs. Yeah.
They would waive like inspection, contingency, their money was hard, you know, within a week, and you couldn't. There's lots of things you can waive. Don't waive any of those things.
Don't waive any of them. But also, if you're going into this process, don't bank on the fact that those things are going to happen for you either, right? Like, if you're banking on the fact that the seller's going to, you know, cover your closing costs and you're going to need that in order for even qualify for a home, like then now is not the right time for you.
So before we move on from the segment, I'm going to make an offer for those who listen to the show, and I recognize that I could regret this later on. Send me a DM if you have any questions, concerns, or you're in this space, and send me a DM telling me what's going on. I mean, give me enough detail to where I can help you out. And I'm willing to always answer questions around this stuff. I get that it might be a question you feel like is silly or weird, or you just want to run something by somebody else. Do it. There's lots of people who hit me up, both on Instagram, LinkededIn. People do this all the time. Like, it's all good. I will answer. Probably won't be timely just because I get a lot of messages these days, but I will answer. So I'm happy to help out if there's anybody out there I can. I'm not asking for anything other than you leave an honest 5-star review. That's it.
Yeah, honestly, that's good. And if you got any questions for me as well, just make sure you direct them towards Chris.
Yeah, there you go. I'll pass them along. Well, and I wanted to say one other thing I think is important to note. Okay, if you want to help support the show, Transcend Companies has been great to us, right? Go to transcendcompany.com/THSP. Whether you're in health, wellness, longevity, skincare for me lately.
Mm-hmm.
They're the way to go. I've actually talked to them recently about a new peptide I'm going to try. I've tried MOTC. I've tried tesafenzine. And the energy level I had on MOTC was spectacular. I honestly miss it a lot. There's a new kind of, I guess, next level of that called SS31. It sounds a little like Russian. I'm thinking SS31. It sounds a little like, you know, but it's supposed to be kind of like MOTC and tesafenzine combined. Lots of intellect and memory capabilities, I think, benefits there. So I'm curious to try that out. But if you're ever worried about not having enough energy, you're worried about longevity or just health in general, get a blood panel done with them. Talk to one of their experts. It's been a great thing for me. My wife has been on some stuff. My wife's lost 15 pounds, and she's already tiny. She's lean, man.
Yeah, she's in good
shape. So it's been a great thing. So I'm not telling you to do that because, hey, I'm selling it to you. I'm just saying it works for us. You want to help out the show, go get a blood panel done, see if something works for you. We would appreciate it. That's transcendcompany.com/THS.
Yeah, they have a lot of trusted professionals over there that are going to make sure that they get you what you need and make sure that they set you up for success for the long term.
And since you're listening, this is The Higher Standard. We are the number one financial literacy podcast in the world. Sitting next to me, my partner in time, the one and only Syed Omar, everybody.
Thank you, my man. Sitting next to me on my left, my partner in crime, Chris Nahibi. Welcome back to the show, everybody.
And behind the ones and twos, the man who turned the air conditioning off right before the show started, and I am broiling in here.
You're getting a little toasty.
We're moist. The one and only DJ Arun.
You're also complaining that your nips are hard.
Not anymore, bro. There is no part of me that's hard right now. I am very moist.
I feel really good right now.
Do you really?
Yeah.
He loves this stuff.
I felt great until you turned it off, and now I'm just all sorts of toasty.
Hey, weren't you the one right before the show saying...
I was talking all the shit.
You're talking all the shit. Yeah. Fat boys like it cold.
You see that DM today from Ted?
Yeah.
Chris, you said you were 206.5, right? I'm like, yeah, 250 now.
Yeah.
He goes, oh.
But weren't you high 180s? Didn't you say that at one point?
I was 187 at one point, yeah. Yeah, that was close to when I was competing, though. Like, and I was too skinny.
You know how people say, I like the old Kanye? I miss the old Chris.
No, you don't. I did fit in suits a lot better, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've opened up the show on what is probably a very misunderstood concept and overly complex buying a home process. But in order to give you some perspective that you're not alone, I thought a great way to start the show off tonight for the next segment would be to play this clip from CNBC. April is Financial Literacy Month. I did not know that. Did you?
I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, there's been a good deal of research on how increasing financial education leads to better decisions, which is the whole core concept of this show.
Why didn't they have us on?
They should have had us on. Probably the dick jokes. That's I'm going to go out.
Oh, you know what it is? Because we attacked Dickler too much.
We did go after Dickler. I supported Dickler.
There's no hate coming from us.
No,
our
I love Dick.
Yeah, Lur.
Yeah, Dickler.
Right.
There's a comma in the name. So I was told by somebody whose name should not be mentioned, Chris, I saw your post on LinkedIn. They're great posts, but can you not cuss so much?
Yeah, please stop.
And I was like, what the fuck do you mean?
Yeah, that's never going to happen.
Yeah. Anyway, this clip is from CNBC's senior personal finance correspondent, Sharon Epperson, who explains the value of financial education and why more schools are providing financial literacy classes.
About two-thirds of Americans are deemed financially illiterate by some reports. Many high schools around the country are working to change that. And I've visited classrooms in several cities over the past year, talked to students, and watched financial education in action.
11th graders in Queens, New York are honing a business idea.
So this product would cost around $15.
For a competition for young entrepreneurs. In Nashville, they're building on classroom lessons to simulate how to manage money in a future career.
Taxes, banking.
And in Winooski, Vermont, high school students are creating a budget for their first apartment.
Okay. So we're going to play a little Price is Right.
All are investing in tomorrow through the financial education classes they're taking today.
It's something you need to do, not just in school, but you have to do it when you grow up, when you get a job, you have to buy a car, a house.
A new report finds the lifetime value of taking a high school personal finance class is about $100,000 for each student, a cumulative benefit of saving regularly and reducing risk.
When you look at what happens when a student does not get a financial literacy class and they don't understand interest rates and credit scores, by and large, they're not able to really compare the interest rates on loans, and they don't really understand the implications of taking on high interest rate debt.
The share of U.S. high school students taking a semester-long personal finance course before graduation is growing fast, from nearly 17% in 2018 to 26% this year, to more than half by 2030 when new policies are fully implemented.
You guys want to jump right into it?
And these students say the class will be valuable for their personal finances and their careers.
All right, Arun, you can cut it there.
I mean, why not 100% though?
Yeah, there's always somebody, right?
Come on.
But look, two-thirds, and I don't know where they get some of this number, right? Two-thirds of the population is financially illiterate. That's the majority, bro.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely see that number being accurate, right?
And here's the problem, is then these people will turn to resources like some of the D-bags online who are offering, like, get-rich-quick schemes, the Chris Crones of the world. Ugh.
Yeah. Terrible. Just terrible advice.
The Andy Elliotts of the world. Oh, God.
Yeah, but then we got your boy Spencer Cornelia right here.
Yeah, he was one of the first goddamn guests on the show back when it was just me. No you. But still us.
Still us, yeah. Comment on this.
Yeah, his comment, none of this matters. High school kids' minds aren't on budgeting, taxes, and personal finance. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. It will always be the case. It has nothing to do with personal finance in high schools. My response, fuck you, Spencer.
Yeah. Come on, man.
I love you, bro, but that is not the fucking mentality.
That's not the mentality. What are you saying? This is a waste of time, so we shouldn't be teaching them anything? Why send the kids to school anyways, then?
No, you can't just say they don't want to learn it, so we're just not going to teach it. Okay, no kid wants to learn math.
That's terrible. Yeah, right.
No kid wants to sit at home and read.
That's terrible.
Okay, they get those skills forced on them so they can do more and they learn the value later on. It's the whole concept. And look, I understand that it's not sexy, but I will take pure objection with the way this is presented on CNBC. Mm-hmm. The problem with the course is they're saying, let's budget for your first apartment. Nobody does care about that, Spencer. But you know what they do care about?
Right.
I'm going to teach you a course on how to get fucking rich.
Yes.
Okay? I'm going to teach you all the shit those gurus on social media won't teach you. And I'll teach you how to identify when they're lying to you, because I'm going to teach you how to really do this.
Right.
I guarantee you, every single one of those fucking kids, their ears just perked up and went, huh?
Right.
I'm in.
Exactly. Right? I mean, just start teaching them the basics just on compound interest alone at that age. So the second they're out of high school, the first job that they get, if that is their first job, then they can just start doing that right out the gate.
And look, I understand. Again, so they're talking to these kids, and some of them have bought in. Some of them buy it. Some of them get it. Some of them see the value there. Some of them don't. That's the whole point of the show, is we're not trying to speak to the audiences like, oh, my God, Chris and Saeed are not sophisticated. They speak like hoodlums.
Yeah.
It ain't for you, guy.
Yeah, we're speaking to the people.
Yeah, we're speaking to the generation who want to hear somebody talk and act like them, which in my case is probably half my age, but that's all good.
Hey, I'm the people's champ.
You're not a champ, bro.
Come on, man. I'm the people's champ.
You farted before the show. Stop.
So did you.
No.
Yes.
First of all, that was an audible moist one.
No, it was not.
Yeah, don't tell me that was booty sweat.
That was an app on my phone.
Whole thing. No, stop. That's a lot. Why?
You can't prove it.
It's because the end of Ramadan is what's going on right now.
Prove it.
Lying bastard. All right. From Business Insider, recession outlook. The economy is flashing a hard landing warning. with near 100% accuracy. And you know, anytime I see hard landing and accuracy being 100%, I'm in.
I got to be in.
You know, I mean, it's how can you not be?
From Jennifer Soar?
It's true. It's there.
It's right there.
I don't blame you for that.
It's like Jennifer Soar.
I wonder if she knows Nick. It's a small community. It's tight.
Come on, man. They're setting us up.
It's too easy. I swear to God, I don't do this by economist name. I don't. I just find articles and they all happen to have that reference. The U.S. economy is flashing a classic recession warning that has only shown a false positive once in the last century. It's only been wrong once in the last 100 years, according to economist Lakshman Achuthan. I practiced that before the show. The business cycle expert and co-founder of the Economic Cycle Research Institute, did not know what that was before this, pointed to troubling signs of weakness in the U.S. with warning signs of a downturn cropping up in multiple areas of the economy. Yeah, that sounds a lot like the Higher Standard podcast.
I mean, I feel like we've said that once or twice.
I just don't know. Are they going to quote us at any point in time? Is there a line?
Honestly.
Is there a number system or something?
I feel
something?
Like they took this graphic from one of our reels.
Yeah, they did. That is a graphic we've used in one of our reels. Very astute observation. The ECRI is this guy's institute. Leading economic index, the economic indicator with a near perfect track record, has started to decline over the last year, Achuthan said, speaking in a webcast with Rosenberg Research on Wednesday.
I will say, I mean, this ECRI leading economic index.
Like, it's a weird thing, I guess.
But why did it take you so long to just start declining? I feel like there's been enough for you to start declining, yeah. Right? So here's the issue that I have with this. Okay, you got something like this being printed, right? That seems like they're trying to be clickbaity. But in the same breath, just a week ago, not even a week ago, right? Friday. You had a jobs report that came out, mm-hmm, that basically said the economy, the labor market is booming.
Yeah.
That's what it signaled.
Yeah.
303,000 jobs were added. Mm-hmm. The unemployment rate went the opposite way. It went from 3.9% down to 3.8%, meaning that there's even more employed people now. Mm-hmm. Right? Which is also bullshit. But here's the thing, right? Whether those numbers are being manipulated or not, okay, you just got to play the game by the rules, okay? And these are the rules. Jerome Powell and his homies at the FOMC came out and said, we will cut rates if there is struggle in the labor market, right? We will do that. All the reports are coming out. There's no struggle. So don't bank on this information helping you out down the road.
Well, not to mention, today is the 9th of April, okay? Tomorrow, the 10th of April, will be a big fucking day for data. Tomorrow, CPI comes out, right? Mm-hmm. New inflation numbers come out. If we hit the inflation target, I think the economy will be okay. If it's higher than expected, expect there to be a big pivot in the markets. You're going to see the market shift downward because the market is going to suggest that this means a rate cut is likely to be farther out because the Fed's going to want to see the data continuing to tick down. If it's ticking up, they're going to say they're not going to take the risk of cutting interest rates now and see it continue to tick up even at a faster cadence.
Right.
So they're just going to hold rates for longer. Right now, the market is, for the first time ever since this entire interest rate cycle started, you know, kind of kicked off, the market has never believed Jerome Powell. They've been going, bullshit.
Right.
You're going to cut rates. Bullshit, you're going to cut rates. Remember when I went on Ryan Pineda's podcast way back in the day? Mm-hmm. On that podcast, if you go back and listen to it, that's probably 2 years ago now, he was saying, they're going to cut rates by the end of the year. And I'm like, no, they're not.
Oh, the $1 billion banker episode?
$10 billion, yeah. He couldn't understand that I don't actually own the bank, that it's publicly traded. It was just lost on him.
Do you understand how it works? Like,
it was at the point where I should, dumbass says what? and I'm like, hey, man, do me a favor. Don't use a clickbait title. He's like, oh, yeah, no problem. $10 billion banker. Really?
Come on, man.
I mean, that just looks bad. And then he looked like, I look huge next to him because I'm a big person. He's not.
Yeah.
That's the problem with me. Is I want to take a photo with somebody who's bigger than me once.
Once?
Just so I look like the small person in the photo. I want to be like, everybody who watches this podcast.
Larry Wheels was in this chair, dude.
I look normal next to him. I look like a normal sized person because he's bigger than me, Saeed, you fucking unappreciative prick. I look like a normal sized person next to him.
Right. So for everyone out there that's wondering what's going to happen with these rate cuts, okay, as of right now, you can just throw the next meeting out the window, okay?
There will be no cut. at that meeting.
There will be no cut at that meeting, okay? The meeting after that is June, okay? It's in June. I think the 20th, right? Around that time.
Yeah.
Okay? There's currently a 55% chance at a rate cut.
There's no rate cut there.
Okay? I don't even think there's a rate cut there. That's a coin flip. Let me tell you right now. After tomorrow, I bet you that goes down.
Yeah, that's going to go down. I agree. Look at that. You and I aligned.
There you go. Are you up for the Nobel? Front to back. Are you up for the Nobel?
I'm not, but I'm there. I'm going to be golf clapping whenever you win it. Yeah, I know him.
It's going to be co-MVP award. But really, as of right now, the July meeting, there's a 75% chance of rates cutting by then. Yeah. And that's what I think you'll really see, because I feel like a lot of negative data will start to come out by then, enough to where they'll realize, okay, we have to do something. We're going to cut, and then they'll hold it for at least a meeting or two.
In a quick word to explain why tomorrow's CPI print is so important is the Fed believed on the last CPI, last inflation print, that seasonality played a big role. And everything that in the multiple press conferences that multiple Fed heads went out and did, including Jerome Powell in San Francisco, they said that they expected that increase. It was in line with their expectations. It didn't bother them. It didn't change the trajectory. They still saw rate cuts at the end of the year, and was very positive if you're in the rate cut, you know, hopeful bucket. But I don't think they'll feel the same way, because if seasonality now out of the picture doesn't stop the inflation number from going up, they have a big problem on their hands. They're going to have to figure out when to cut now in light of that.
Yeah, and how are you really going to spin this, right? I believe there was some Fed speak this last week or so that they officially came out and said, We're done raising rates.
They did, too.
Right? Yeah. So, I mean, even though we all knew that already, but really, how did they pivot at their next meeting, right? And how did they really spin this information? How did they, you know, tap dance around all this? Because, you know, he always keeps his options open at every meeting. You know, we still need to see, I don't know if we're going to cut or if we're going to hold, but I just know that we need to keep rates higher for longer. Like, so that's going to be the real thing that everyone's going to be tuning in for.
I would love for the inflation number to come in. I don't want it to come in high, but if it does come in high at the press conference at the next FOMC meeting, there's like this awkward moment where Jerome Powell is supposed to come out, but he doesn't come out, and out walks Neil Kashkari. And then he takes an iPad and he puts it down. On the back of the iPad's a Bluey sticker, and he puts it down in front of him, and he has a crayon in his finger instead of a pen. And he goes, taps the mic. I was right.
I told you, Jerome.
Now when they laugh at your name, Jerome.
Right.
Jerome Powell.
He's an interesting guy.
He's an interesting guy. That was wrong. From the Kabisi letter, total credit card debt is skyrocketing. I know you thought it was high at $1.13 trillion. Well, as savings rates have also crashed over this time, total revolving debt credit in the U.S. is now at $1.3 trillion, up from $960 billion in 2021.
And just earlier this year, the start of the year, it was at $1.13 trillion.
That's correct. Yeah. Meanwhile, the savings rate has plummeted to just 3.6% as affordability hits record lows. Interest rates on credit card debt are also hitting record highs near 25%. 25%, it just hurts to say. Mm. That's a lot of percentage.
That's a lot of percentage, exactly.
Mm. We have record high credit card debt, record high interest rates, and record low savings rates combined all together for a Molotov cocktail of record high non-household debt. Is a soft landing really that likely? Is it that possible? I would say if it is possible, and Arun is kind enough to pull up this chart, total credit card debt versus savings rate. Whenever you see two lines, this widely disconnected.
Going in the opposite direction.
Yeah. One going up, in this case, it's a red line. I know you're colorblind, Saeed. The one going down, green. Mm-hmm. And the one with green is your savings, and the one going up is your credit card debt. I would say you got a problem.
Right. So remember, the reason why you see that spike in the savings rate back in 2020, there was a lot of stimulus packages going around. Obviously, a lot of people were working from home at the time, so they mm-hmm. weren't having to spend that money on the gas prices. I mean, I myself, just going into the office now on a hybrid schedule, I'm paying $400 a month in gas.
Don't put that on me, boy. Yeah, mid-show.
You like that pause? That.
Don't,
you like
don't, that, don't you, do that.
You like that? Oh,
the fucking
oh, also,
glimmer in your eye
also,
when you say that shit to me.
Also, the $300 in after-school expenses that I got to pay now, right? So that's $700 just right
it's just
there.
Just $300, that's it?
It's 1 day a week.
Wow, ball so hard, brother.
It's 1 day, oh, ball so hard. How are you going to reverse? You can't Uno reverse Uno me on this?
Arun, you remember when you paid $300 a week?
Nope.
The sick part is you're laughing at my misery.
I'm laughing at your misery. Want to know why?
Why?
Bro, you got it so good.
Who?
You.
I got it so
what,
good?
What time did you pick up your kids today?
What? When they got out of school, 2:30.
Man, I would love to be able to pick up my kids at 2:30.
Hold on. And then going back to work and working.
I'm just saying. I would love that break.
Oh, you
my
mean,
butt hurts so much from sitting down all day long for
my lunch. My lunch break is spent driving, picking up the kids. I'm
not
taking
walking
lunch.
Distance.
I'm gonna be honest with you,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, can't do it.
You're supposed to be walking distance.
Yeah, I can't. I am walking distance, but I'm working so hard to make sure that I'm on time and finishing all my assignments, my deadlines.
Assignments? You don't go to school.
These are assignments, bro.
You don't look like you missed a meal.
My tasks. Damn, son.
I'm just saying.
So yeah, that's why you see
nachos.
That's why you see I did have some nachos recently. How'd you called that?
I just no, it smelled like your fart smelled like that earlier.
That's why you see that spike in the savings rate because of all that back then. Now you got to keep in mind this is the savings rate, not how much people are actually saving.
Yeah, and that's a big disconnect. I think people don't understand savings rate versus actual savings.
Right.
I will say the actual savings is also down pretty significantly, but I think this is a better barometer for how much people are able to save in light of the expense load.
Right. So. And to put things into perspective, I know it's something that we routinely touch on the show, but I figured it'd be good because Chris did touch on affordability. In 2020, households were earning $59,000 a year on average, and that could afford them a typical home of $240,000. Okay.
Where are you going to find a home for that much now?
Well, you're not, right? Today, those shopping for a home need to earn $106,000 per year to afford a median price home at $342,000.
Wow.
That's what's going on with the affordability crisis.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, Saeed and I did want to play with a new section. Shall we do it?
I think we should, Odun. Let's give Odun the runway here a little bit.
I think we should give him the wings, let him fly.
Let's see him go.
Let's see how this plays out.
Why don't you bring up what we're doing exactly?
Yeah, give us a little rundown there, Arun, and don't be gentle with it. Give it to us hard.
So for the last week, I have been doing research on some pop culture events that I felt were relevant or interesting to me. I should say, not even to you two.
Okay, because why would we matter, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like it's supposed to be fun for me.
Oh, is that what it is? I did not recall giving Saeed, that instruction.
Saeed loves this game.
What game is this?
Aha!
Oh, okay. Oregon player comes forward as $1.3 billion Powerball lottery winner, officials say. You know what we call this on the show?
Mm.
Poor people tax.
Yeah, most of these guys wind up broke. And I look at this stuff and I think to myself, okay, first of all, why would you come forward?
You have to claim your...
No, you can do it anonymously in some states. Yeah, you don't have to come forward, or you can wear a mask or something. Be like Kanye. I'm rich! You know, whatever.
Yeah.
But, I feel bad, because number one, people go, oh, you won $1.3 billion, Tom?
Yeah.
But really, it depends on how he gets... If he's getting a lump sum, he's going to get way, way less than that.
First of all, always take the lump sum.
Yeah, he's going to get way less than that. If he's taking the payouts over time, you know, okay, fine. But so many of these people go broke. Because they don't have, get ready for it, financial literacy.
Yeah.
They don't have people helping them spend their money in a way that's going to keep them wealthy for a prolonged period of time. And it's stunning to see how much money can go so quickly for people who don't have a plan.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think more so it creates more damage for everyone else around them. So forget the person that came forward and won the $1.3 billion. How many people go their whole lifetime, you know?
Playing the game, poor people tax.
Yeah,
dude, I know so many people in the office, I know like very wealthy people who pay poor people tax. For those of you who want to know, I refer to the lottery as a poor people tax.
Yeah,
because to me, it's kind of like a scam, right?
It is a little scammy.
I understand that you get some government infrastructure and some benefit beyond this, but okay, look, come on, man, like people are spending a dollar here, $5 there, whatever, gambling in a legalized way to win this opportunity to win a lottery, and the odds are compellingly against you.
Yes.
Right? Is that a word, compellingly?
We just made it one.
The odds are compelling against you? Is that yeah, whatever. People play it, they pay it. And then the worst part about it is they'll come into the office and they will fantasize about what they're going to do with their earnings and their winnings if they were to ever win this.
This is Odin's favorite game.
Is it really?
Exactly why I brought it up.
What is your fantasy here?
What's the first thing you do?
You buy P. Diddy?
buy all of his tapes.
Yeah. Odin posts his bail. Take
you're
that.
Free, P.
Take that.
What is the first thing I do?
His bad boy.
Pay off my house.
Pay off your house. First thing you do.
Yeah.
See right there. Financial literacy 101 might not be the best thing. You're probably getting a tax write-off benefit for the interest you're paying on your mortgage. So paying off your house may actually increase your tax basis at some point in time. It may be more worthwhile to invest that money. Cause you're what's your mortgage payment right now?
$4,600.
God, I forgot you live in a palazzo. I meant interest rate. I apologize.
You, bro, right when you asked, I'm like, fuck, man. Oh, dude, he's setting you up?
Yeah. What was the interest rate on that?
3.2.
Okay. You could put your money into the markets and make a whole lot more. So what's your current outstanding balance? Let's just say it's $500,000 in your mortgage, right? You took that $500,000 mortgage at 3.2%. You could put it in the market and make a whole hell of a lot more than that, right? So to me, paying off your mortgage doesn't make sense with that mortgage rate. And that's where like that fantasy that I know is like this cool idea concept. When you start getting the logistics of it, this is how these guys go broke.
This is how they go broke. And it's not just, okay, the home that they're currently living in. You know what they end up doing? So they'll go buy themselves some baller ass mansion. Okay. Mm-hmm. Not realize, okay, when I do go broke, I'm not going to be able to afford the property taxes on this. And then they lose the house too. They end up having to sell the home eventually, too. You know, it's like they're not factoring in all the other components to it, right?
Yeah, and then you get hit up for investments and everything else. You want to hear my fantasy around this?
Your fantasy?
Yeah, because if I were to ever do this and if I ever play and I were to come into a lump sum of money, you know what I would do?
I'm telling you right now, I'm coming into work and I'm fucking with you every day.
That's what I'm doing.
Oh, 100%. Same here. I would quit my
day.
Job.
Every day I'm dropping cash and watching you pick it up.
I would literally have the ticket framed in my office.
Yeah.
And then I'd remove all other things hanging on the walls. It would just be that. Just that on the walls.
Yeah, but then they take the ticket, don't they? They don't let you keep the ticket.
No, they'll let you keep
it. He's not cashing it. He's just leaving the ticket.
No. I would cash it. 100% I would cash it. I would cash it. I would claim ownership, like, publicly, right?
Yeah.
And then I would frame it, the ticket or a picture of the ticket or me holding the ticket or whatever, the award ceremony, something like that. I put it in the room as, like, a discussion point. And then I would literally not change a single thing in my life. And just fuck with people every single day.
Honestly, the idea of me potentially winning and being able to fuck with you every day is so enticing that I might start playing poor people tax.
It wouldn't
honestly, every day, it would bother. Get the fuck out of here. It would not bother you.
You'd be buying me lunch every day.
That's fine. But
the
guess
rest
what?
Of your life.
Every day I'd walk right by you and I'd be like, hey, Chris, I won.
I'd be like, but you didn't get that black card, bro. Invite only, bitch.
Oh, that's good.
Tomb Raider. This is such a weird pop culture section.
Okay. Lara Croft is that how you pronounce her name?
Yeah.
Is the
don't
most.
Act like you don't know.
But I'll be honest. I never got into this.
I didn't either. But
I got into video games a little bit before this and then never again after
Oh,
this.
I never played the video game.
Yeah, Lara Croft is the most iconic video game character new poll finds. That's just because you got these nerds playing video games that are just like fantasizing over Lara Croft.
No, I'll even go one step further. That's because Angelina Jolie dressed up as Lara Croft in Tomb Raider and everybody was like trying to live their fantasy through playing some kind of weird...
Yeah.
What is it called when you dress up like these idiots?
Halloween?
No.
You know, cosplay.
Cosplay. There you go. See, I knew he would know it.
What is it?
They're trying to all cosplay. Yeah. So for like years, for Halloween, like all these events, women would dress up because Angelina Jolie at the time was one of the most attractive women in the world. At least that was what people thought. If you like that kind of thing, I don't. I've only seen my wife when they got married. I've never heard. Anyway. I mean, my wife asked me, she's like, do you find her attractive? I'm like, hell no. Fuck no. Fuck no.
Oh,
no.
Man.
Is that a woman?
Right.
I did not know that.
That's crazy.
Because she's like, you follow her. I'm like, I don't even know how that happened.
That's crazy.
I think Instagram's over here honestly, trying to boost the algorithm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that the video game was that popular. Yeah. I mean, come on, everybody played Bond. Bond, that's a way better video game.
Bond, I did play.
Mario Kart.
Wait, Odun, is this first came out on N64?
No, it's PlayStation.
Oh, it was originally a PlayStation.
That nerd
game.
Knowledge.
Yeah, so it came
totally
out later. It's like 95.
Imagine
96.
What this man. You could be Elon Musk if you just got rid of the video game and sports shit and filled it with, I don't know, fucking missiles and like electric cars.
Yeah.
Just, you could be so powerful, bro.
Man, it's right here. 96.
It's right here. 96. There you go. I don't know, man.
No, but I was going to ask.
Most iconic video game character.
It's Mario, right?
Mario has to be the most.
Bro, there's no way it's not Mario.
And the Mario movie was fucking solid.
Yeah,
you see that?
Right. Crash Bandicoot, bro?
What?
What?
What was that?
I'm just floating ideas, bro.
That. I mean, I would have gone Sonic the Hedgehog above that shit.
I mean, obviously, bro.
Donkey?
Donkey Kong?
DK?
Donkey Kong!
Yeah, DK is the shit. I don't know about this, man. I actually didn't. Do you watch this, Odin?
I did. Yeah, that was actually the reason why I brought this up, because I want to know, do you still watch TV shows?
Oh, no. So Odin brought up this article. House of the Dragon drops dueling season 2 trailers as HBO makes viewers choose between well, how do you pronounce her name?
Rhaenyra
and
Allison.
So this is a spinoff from Game of Thrones, right?
Correct. It's the prequel.
Yeah, no, I remember seeing the trailers for the first season. I was like, I'm not really into it. Because Game of Thrones, the way it ended, man.
You know where this goes for you. You know why he did this, right?
Wait, hold on. Hold on. Can I ask, is it a trap? Did you watch Game of Thrones?
Fuck no, I don't watch softcore porn.
You can't talk then, bro.
Oh, by the way.
Bro, the character development in Game of Thrones, unmatched.
Did you guys see Pretty Things or whatever the hell it was? They just won an award with, you know what I'm talking about?
Pretty Things?
Yeah, that's what it's called, right, Arun? Pretty Things?
What?
No.
The movie that came out?
No, I didn't see it. What is this?
Yeah, that was a weird movie. It was basically like softcore porn.
So you watched that softcore porn?
I didn't know. Like this, I know. I wouldn't watch this, but
yeah, this one's a little crazy. There's a little bit of incest in this.
Why, dude?
It is. I'm
like brother sister stuff?
Yeah.
Why would you watch that?
Hold on. It's also back in the day, it was very common.
Whoa. I don't want to know what you
did. At that time,
bro. I don't want to know what you did. Yeah, pretty.
Wait,
yeah, that's it. Yeah, is that it?
2001?
No.
Pretty Thing. Well, Christopher, what are you watching,
no,
bro?
Yeah, no, man. It just came out. This won a bunch of awards. Is it Pretty Liars or something like that? Or Pretty something? I don't know. Fuck.
Okay, bump run.
Yeah, anyways, what shows do you watch, Chris? And what show would you recommend to someone to watch?
Well, last time I did that, Arun, you were in the room. Saeed promised to watch Loki and never did.
I think
did.
It was like 6 months ago, too.
That's definitely not 6 months ago. I said I'd watch it by the end of April. That's what I said. I did say that. Check the tapes.
I'm the guy who has to go check the tapes.
Check the tapes.
I'm not doing that.
Arun, you want to do me a favor? Just tell him how it is.
Bro.
See, look, he's at a loss for words. We've given up on you.
Bro, I'll be honest. I literally don't watch any TV.
What are you doing every night?
The most.
Oh, wait. You're being the world's greatest husband. I forgot. I'm sorry.
And dad.
That's right.
My wife and I, we will get into a TV show, right? And she herself has admitted she does want to watch Loki with me. But lately, we've been on a kick where after we put the kids down, we literally will just sit and talk for like an hour.
God damn it. Arun, why? How do you deal with this shit?
He's politically correct 24/7.
Hold on. But I'm not lying.
Okay. We like to go and sit on some pillows in the living room and sit with our legs crossed while the lights are turned off. We want to hold each other's hands, and then we want to get inside each other's
mind
palace.
We meditate. We talk to God.
No,
I want to feel her inside my mind palace.
That's not what I said.
And I want her to feel me inside her mind palace. While we're in each other's mind palaces, we're doing our positive affirmations.
Well, you gotta keep one thing in mind. Look,
do you do the cold plunge afterward, or what do you? How does
Odun,
it work?
Odun works with his wife at home, so he sees his wife all day long. Right?
Don't do this.
You check in with your wife too from time to time throughout the day, right?
So you don't check in with your wife throughout the day?
I do, but she's a dental hygienist, so she's with patients all day long. I can't just randomly call her and talk to her. So I don't get a chance to talk to her much during the day.
If you think this is doing anything to save you, it's not.
Save me how? I'm not lying. This is the God honest truth.
So at the end of the day, when your kids go to bed, you're like, oh, God, I just want to talk to my wife so badly right now.
That's not what I said.
Do you get popcorn and talk to her?
No, you want to know the truth? We usually warm up some tea. We'll have some tea and decaf. Yeah.
And you go,
This is so how was this
your
is
day?
Getting this is
how
getting,
was your day, honey?
This is getting so bad for me right now.
This is how funny. So Chris, so a few weeks ago, my sister told my wife about this, and my wife comes home and she's just like, dude, why don't we do this? Why don't we ever sit down after the kids go to sleep and
did
talk?
Did you say at this point that you're not whipped, or did you wait till later on to say that?
I looked at her and I was like, get the fuck out of here. We work together. We're in the same office. I'm 2.5 feet away from you while we're working. We talk all day.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's also not, you're also not giving her your undivided attention, though.
There it is.
Oh, God damn it.
Can I just mute him for the rest of the show?
Do you think he actually means this shit? That's
he does.
That's or do you think he drives home like, ha, 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 got him.
Got them, bitches.
This is so.
You know me, too. After this episode drops next week, I'll be like, hey, honey, I need you to tune in.
Yeah,
this,
tune in to this episode between this part and this part. I want you to listen real hard, right?
Yeah.
I told him the truth. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Can I go play some golf now?
Yeah.
All right, last one, right? What is this last one?
There's one more in the notes.
Okay, the UConn men's basketball team has won back-to-back NCAA championships.
Chris, name me one player that played.
No clue, not one.
One player
name that played? One player in college. Come on, you know one.
I don't know
you one. You know one.
One in college?
Bronny James.
There you go.
There you go.
Get that one.
Only because he declared for the draft. And I think if you're
I think
Lakers,
he's going to return. I think he's going to return.
No. If you're LeBron James and you really think you're kind of getting towards your physical end where you're just like, I don't know like how much longer I can do this, don't you think you go to the GM and you go, hey, man, just take his salary out of my salary and pick the kid up?
Yeah, use like a second round pick to pick him up. 100%. You do
so
that.
He's going to get drafted.
No, of course he'll get drafted, and that's a really cool story at the end of the day. I get it. Like, yeah, he'll get some kind of privilege, but whatever. Like, LeBron's earned that. You know what I mean? For as much as he's done for the sport, like, come on now.
Someone will sign him in hopes of getting LeBron to come there.
Kind of like steering your son's career in a way that wouldn't normally happen and maybe hurting him long term.
I mean, I think he'll ultimately stay another year. I don't think he's going to actually declare, like, there's, like, steps to this, right?
Yeah.
He says he'll declare for the draft, but he could still return. But UConn winning this, I'm not going to lie, I was a little upset Duke didn't win. Thought they had
everything. I had no idea. When was the final game?
Last night.
Oh. Were you holding hands with your wife when this was going on?
No way. Are you kidding me? He did not even turn it on, the wife.
I didn't watch it. My son had basketball practice, so I was coaching. Time.
Yeah, so after your son's basketball practice, you came home,
no,
warmed up some tea, got the kids to bed, and then had some decaf tea while we were talking to your wife.
We were prepping for Eid last night and today.
All right, last one.
Thank God.
This is so.
I can't do this anymore.
This ain't going viral. Bad Boys, Ride or Die.
You watching it?
I didn't see the last one.
Hey, honestly, bad timing for the movie.
You think it's going to be part of the soundtrack? Bad Boy.
Hey, which Diddy soundbite works best for this?
They're not. By the way, we didn't get pinged. Fun fact, I dropped.
Bro, I couldn't believe it.
We didn't get pinged for a sound.
Odun has no idea what we're talking about.
Because he doesn't listen to a fucking. God damn it, Arun. Did you listen to today's show?
No,
he didn't.
Oh, you're killing me.
Yeah, Odun, Chris put the. Bad Boys for Life, what's it called?
The song,
yeah, the beat.
The beat in the, so in the show, we're like, Bad Boy.
Yeah.
We probably put it in the end of the show.
We ain't going nowhere. All right, let's get into these reviews. We got a review this time through YouTube, that which brings me to a good point. If you're listening to this episode on Apple or Spotify, please head over and leave us an honest 5-star review. Anytime we do get any review, it does a lot for us and the show, and it means a lot to us. If you're watching over on YouTube, please make sure you subscribe, ring that notification bell. Make sure you hit that like button. Let's get this video out to as many people as possible. Make sure you do all the moist, goody-good sassafras.
You know, one of the things I didn't understand about YouTube was I didn't understand some of the things that YouTube does in and of itself on its own. And I bet you guys didn't know this either. Whenever you say like and subscribe in any YouTube video that's posted, it'll actually highlight the like and subscribe button on YouTube when you say that.
I've never caught that.
Yeah, it does that.
I think we're content creators now. If I follow a certain channel out the gate, right when I click the episode to watch it, I just hook them up with a like. I just hook them up with it right away.
I like everybody's content. I like ding, 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 ding. Like.
Yeah, come on,
I'm
man.
Surprised you have time to do that while you're talking to your wife.
That's what I'm talking to my wife, dude. All right, this from our guy Alex Quintanilla.
Fucking serious? Alex is like a long-time listener and like a long-time follower of the show.
I'm just making sure I pronounce the name properly, bro. Relax.
I'm just saying,
where's all the hate coming from?
The whole wife thing just upset me.
I could tell you're really angry.
I want you to come in here one day and be like, you know what? I'm so fucking mad at her, bro.
It's never going to happen. I've been listening to this show over a year now because the guys at Mind Pump brought it up before Fuzzy Knuckles was on the show full time. I didn't have an interest in economics a couple years ago, but as you get older, this kind of information becomes more important to be aware of. I can 100% attribute my knowledge and interest in economics thanks to these guys, from Arun's loud chewing to Saeed's need to prove he's the best dad in the world and Chris's weird obsession with body hair.
You do got a lot of it.
I mean, real men do.
And color me a woman. You want to drink tea with me?
Because of this podcast, my wife and I felt the confidence to purchase and to go and purchase our first home recently.
Oh, congratulations, man.
Yeah, congratulations. Thank you for all the information. Hope you guys come back to 2 shows a week schedule. Keep up the good work, fellas. P.S. I'm the guy who offered my wife services to laser Saeed's body hair.
That was a real offer, by the way.
That was a real sponsor of the show.
Dead ass serious. He sent me DMs and everything. Like, hey, I'll come up, have him come in.
I'm telling you right now.
I was literally trying to get you laser hair removal from the show.
I'm willing to do a reenactment of 40-Year-Old Virgin for a show promo.
First of all, I literally FaceTimed you guys the last time I had my ass laser hair removed. You better be doing some shit.
Is that where you went?
No. But if Alex, if you want to see my ass up there, it's out there. I'm happy to show it to you. I'm very happy with the results.
Yeah.
Silky smooth.
Oh, and I think we got another review from Raul. He's doing the Lord's work out there.
Yeah, Raul went out there.
Raul out there got his sister listening to the show. Shout out to Raul.
Yeah.
This one was his sister.
Raul Torres, the man.
Yeah. Shout out.
Alex, we love you, but Raul's got like 6 more on you.
I mean, everyone's way behind compared to Raul.
You know, when I read this and he called you Fuzzy Knuckles, I knew exactly what he was talking about.
What do you mean?
Your knuckles are fuzzy. They are.
Why? But why is it like fuzzy here and not here? Like, why these two?
It's probably your tea hands for you and your wife.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, well, probably, the way I grip it.
Yeah, you grip the tea like that, you know? And then these two hold your pride.
What is this? God damn it. Set myself up for this one.
So the hair is falling out because there's no pride.
Oh, man. All right. Hodu, you got anything else?
Nope.
Nice segment. I liked it. I dig it.
If you like the segment, let us know. We've been getting a lot of comments lately to say, hey, come back to 2 shows a week. We really want to. We probably will. We're kind of dialing things in. If you've noticed, the streaming platforms now have custom covers, which also match the YouTube. Trying to come up with more cohesive brand feel and really trying to bring you some better quality product. We hope you like it. So do let us know if the segment was good. And if it's shit, then we'll tell everyone to shut the fuck up and never do it again.
Yeah, we're gonna try it out for at least a couple more weeks. See what you guys think. And like we said earlier in the show, go over to transcendcomedy.com/THSP, talk to one of their trusted professionals over there, and get yourself set up with some goody good stuff.
All right. Say it. Hit me with it. Give it to me hard.
Hard?
Hard.
Make you sore? That was so good.
Dick.
That was such a good segment. Good night, everybody.
Bye.